Hello there. I'm Denny Marsden. I've been pounding the news beat here at the Mid-City Sentinel for quite a spell, and I've had city editors hand me more different assignments than you can shake a stick at. But the toughest assignment that ever came my way was handed out to me by the chief the other day.
Marsden, I want to ask you a couple of personal questions. Do you mind?
Oh, look, Chief. I was born with these bags under my eyes.
You got me wrong, Danny. I mean about your future. About your plans.
Don't beat around the bush, Chief. My skin's thick.
I've got an important assignment for you, Danny, and I want to be sure to get it across to you forcefully.
Go ahead. Grill me.
What would you do, Danny, if I fired you today?
Remember, you asked for this, Chief.
I'm asking you.
I'd be working in Centerville on the Tribune tomorrow, and for more than you're paying me. The fact of the matter is, they've been approaching me regularly.
Yes. Yes, they'd naturally want a man trained to the Sentinel. You're getting invaluable experience here, Marsden. I hope you appreciate it. Now to get on with the question.
Oh, won't you linger a little longer on that one, Chief? I kind of like it.
Now, that'll do for the blackmail, Danny. The point I'm trying to get across is, what's your attitude towards security?
Oh, when my stuff is appearing in the paper regularly, when the people are reading it, and when another paper is bidding for my services, I feel reasonably secure.
Perhaps you feel secure now, but what about the future? Have you thought about sickness or the time you'll want to retire?
Oh, I see what you mean. Security and the future are tied in together. Well, I've got my membership in the Blue Cross, and I've got a pension policy with a Canadian insurance company.
All right. You've probably got the best kind of security, the kind you're providing for yourself. But what about, say, a ditch digger or a government clerk? If he gets fired, he can't just go and work for another government.
I know a fellow in the advertising business who has a penthouse, a butler, and he makes a whopper of a salary. But he worries himself sick about his future. In fact, he lives on aspirin. If one account quits, he's in a mess. He's got so many obligations.
Now, that's a point, Danny. Security means different things to different people. I'd like a definition. Now, your assignment is, how can we get the most security for all the people? Go into it in detail. All our readers are interested. And make it easy to understand.
That's easy for me, Chief. I don't know any $10 words.
Maybe that's why the Centerville Tribune wants you. They only hire illiterates, you know.
Oh, thank you, Chief. Thanks a lot. You say the nicest thing. Well, Nellie, as my right-hand man, where do we start in the security business? The chief wants us to interview people from all classes.
Well, it's old-timers week in town. Why don't we interview one of the old fellows they're honoring?
Nellie, you're not only a gold digger, you're a genius. Let's go.
Well, son, there wasn't so much talk about security in my day. Eh, Martha?
That's right, Mr. Marsden. I guess our security was just what we could do with our own hands.
Martha always cooked us up a square meal somehow or other. Even when there wasn't much to do it with. Seemed to have a knack for making a lot out of a little.
Mrs. Jones, can you remember back to the time you felt most secure of all?
Oh, land, now, just let me think. Yes, guess I can. I was just 18 and Jim wasn't much older. Funny thing, it was a stormy night, the first snowstorm that winter. We'd moved into our first homestead that spring on a lonely concession line in northern Ontario, but I don't recall Jim and me ever being lonely. I'd put in a good garden, and Jim had cleared all the land he could and readied the cabin for winter, snug as could be. Well, the wind was something terrible that night, but we'd a good fire, and the cellar was full of vegetables and preserves, and we'd lots of good dry poplar. I sat back and listened to the wind howl, and I thought, ain't it nice we're so snug and comfortable? Well, Jim and me did well. We built a big home, one of the nicest later on. But I can't remember, Miss McCoy, when I've ever felt so secure as I did that stormy night.
I remember it well, Martha. Remember, I looked out the window, I guess, and I grinned from ear to ear. I said to you, let her blow, Martha, let her blow. Well, son, that's real security, the kind you make for yourself with your own hands. There's happiness in it.
Well,
next, Danny?
I'll just sit where you are, Nellie. Our next interview is coming to us. Well, he should be here now.
Who is he?
Oh, he's a young lad. You'll like him. He's a veteran studying engineering at university.
Married?
Interested?
You said I'd like him. Most of the marriageable guys I meet are married, darn it.
No, he's single. Tall, dark, and handsome. But remember, we're doing research for the Mid-City Sentinel, not a love story magazine.
Shh, I think this must be him coming now. Brother, he is handsome.
Now, lay off, Nellie. This is strictly... Oh, come in, Mr. Cartwright. I'd like you to meet my assistant, Miss McCoy. Nellie, Roy Cartwright.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Miss McCoy.
I asked Roy to do some thinking about security and then come and give us the veterans' views on security.
Well, I haven't got the whole thing all doped out, if that's what you mean. I talked to a lot of the fellows, though, and I've written out some observations for what they're worth. People seem to think we're afraid to stand on our own two feet, that there we're too security-minded, that we're all ready to have the government take over our thinking or go communist.
And there's no truth in it, eh?
Well, we may be security-minded, but we're not pushovers for communism or any other ism. We were regimented in the Army not so long ago, and none of us fell in love with that routine. Many veterans have gone into business for themselves and made a go of it, too. But most of us just happen to want jobs with big companies. That doesn't mean we lack initiative. You don't need to be a dull cog in a machine when you join a big firm. You merely get big opportunities. It's not the job that counts, it's the attitude. If you hunt a job looking for security, you're behind the eight ball from the start. But if you're looking for opportunity, you can find it almost everywhere.
That's right, Mr. Cartwright. I think it's wonderful the way you're going to university and everything when you could...
Excuse me, Nellie. Roy, give me in a sentence or two, what kind of security do you want?
Well, I'll put it this way, Danny. We want to be able to get jobs, preferably with big companies that are well established. But at the same time, we want the right to go into business for ourselves if we feel like it.
Well, thanks, Roy. That seems to sum up things all right. If we want more, we'll call you.
Yes, you bet we will, Roy. And if you think of anything more, you call us. The telephone number is...
It's in the book. Goodbye, Roy, and thanks a million. Well, Miss McCoy, what happened to you last night?
For your information, I was out with Roy Cartwright.
Oh, that was fast work.
Yes, wasn't it? You know that part in his notes about this generation having lots of enterprise and initiative?
Yeah.
Underline that, Danny. Underline it.
Okay. Now, get that shorthand book of yours ready and lots of pencils. We're going to hear an economist, a real live economist with umpteen initials after his name. He's speaking tonight at the auditorium.
Is he married?
Yes, he's married. The wife is beautiful and he has three children.
Oh, well, a girl can't always be lucky.
And we can be sure of two things. First, the elderly are not to be left in distress in the present temper of the country unless we lose our prosperity. Second, no matter who pays in the first instance, the burden will ultimately fall on those who produce. We've gone a long way towards social security. We have unemployment insurance, family allowances, old age pensions, and a variety of subsidies and considerations, all designed with the hope of providing a measure of security. Naturally, this has increased our taxes, and, along with the war and its high costs, has given a dose of inflation. Consequently, we must be very careful that an inflationary spiral is not encouraged so that we defeat our aim. Already many old folks, widows, and others who had saved for their retirement are finding the going tough. We do not want to rob such people of security in our attempts to provide it for others. We need to remember that even good things cannot come all at once. Governments cannot create coal and wheat, steel and beef by a wave of the magic wand or by passing laws. They must be produced by our work, our vision, and initiative. But if we continue to cherish our system of enterprise and initiative, if we build well, we can have an increasing standard of living, a country of color and of opportunity, and we can be secure as a nation. We can continue our adventure in human enterprise and do so successfully. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Penfield has been kind enough to offer to answer any questions. Please word your question as briefly as possible.
Dr. Penfield, I'm a garment worker in the Mid-City factory. My name is Jane Smith. I just can't understand why the government doesn't guarantee us security. During the war, they deducted money from our checks for compulsory savings. Why can't they continue to do that? And when a person is old, say 65, give it back with interest. They did it in the war. I just don't see why they can't do it today.
Miss Smith has asked a very important question. It sounds simple on the face of it, but it just doesn't work that way, and I'll try to tell you why. Today you give the government $1. 30 years from now, when you retire, they give it back to you with interest. Now that dollar and interest by no means guarantees your security, because you don't know what you'll be able to buy with it. In the meantime, it has been idle for 30 years, producing nothing. Even the interest hasn't really been earned. The government has to tax you in order to pay that interest. However, if you'd invested that dollar in some industry, producing goods, it would increase the chances of security for yourself and for everyone. All security depends on how productive the nation is. It does not depend on money. It depends on goods. Steel, fuel, wheat, beef, and the like. As long as we don't tax the life out of the working man or the businessman and load them down to the point where there's no reward for hard work or initiative, we'll forge ahead. And we don't need to become slaves to be secure. We can have prosperity and keep our freedom. Indeed, only by keeping our freedom can we have the kind of security any self-respecting Canadian would want.
I wonder if you would have written what I did, if you'd had the assignment. Here's what I said. Everyone wants security. All except the dreamers know that it is not easy to get. It cannot be had by simply passing laws, by trying to soak the rich, or by printing paper money. But there are ways to bring us closer to it for all the people. First, invest to spend our economy so that our fields, factories, mines, and manpower are increasingly productive. Second, insist that our government handle finances as efficiently and as carefully as a thrifty housewife does her household budget. With a plentiful supply of goods and a stable value to our dollars, plus a willingness on the part of all of us to provide for the unfortunate, we have the foundation for any real and lasting social security plan. Without these factors, all such plans are dreams and illusions. Well, that's the gist of what I wrote. If you agree, or if you disagree, write to me, won't you? Just write to Danny Marsden, care of the station to which you are listening.